From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With the news that former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is throwing his hat into the presidential race, many are speculating that America's billionaire class could be panicking. Bloomberg, who's a billionaire himself, is apparently running because the only centrist frontrunner among Democratic primary candidates is former Vice President Joe Biden, and Biden's poll numbers appear to be flagging. With a deadline looming to make it onto the primary ballot in some states, does Bloomberg's move indicate a panic about what wealthy elites may lose if Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren become president? Joining me to help answer that question is Doug Henwood, political economist, editor of Left Business Observer, contributing editor at The Nation, and host of the Pacifica program Behind the News. He's written several books, including After the New Economy and My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. Welcome to the program, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
So you are a New Yorker, and you guys really know how to pick mayors, don't you?
Oh, it's embarrassing. Well, you know, I think I'm not 100% sure this is true, but I think more mayors, former mayors of New York City, have gone to jail than onto higher office. So it's,
well, and Giuliani may be joining one of them, maybe joining them someday soon.
So I think the last one was like 1853, maybe. So it's really not a stepping stone to higher office generally.
So let's talk about Bloomberg. He has flirted with the idea of having a presidential run in the past in 2016, and then, you know, sort of at the last minute pulled out. It looks as though, at least at the moment that you and I are talking, that he may actually officially sign up to be on the ballot in some states. What do you think that means?
Well, there are all these leaks coming out of his people Wednesday and Thursday suggesting that he was planning to run. And I can't imagine that the people around him would be making up stories. So he's probably, you know, hanging back a bit, but it looks like he is going to. And I'll say a couple of things about Bloomberg. One is there is no doubt where his allegiances lie when he was mayor. You know, he is a mayor by and for the rich, the very rich. He has a good deal of managerial competence. There are a lot of things he did just in like making the city run day to day that were good. But, you know, that's not what we really want in our political leaders. We also want people who will take us to a better place and not just make the existing structures work better. And so he's, you know, I think a candidate of for the people who think that everything was pretty much okay in the U.S. until Trump ruined everything. So if we can just go back to the days before Trump, everything will be all right. And that all the structural issues of this country, all the problems are just of such recent vintage that we can somehow go back in time. One thing he was quite good on was climate. He was among all, you know, sort of mainstream politicians, he had the best climate policy that I can think of. But other than that, you know, he's just strictly for the real estate and Wall Street crowd, and you know, the working class can just go jump in a lake.
So let's talk about how it's possible that his candidacy may be a response to Sanders and Warren. I'm looking at the New York Times announcement of this story, or their story around his announcement, and this is how they explain it. Biden had, he'd grown skeptical that Biden was on track to win the Democratic nomination, and he does not see the two leading liberals in the race, Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, as strong candidates for the general election. The Times, I think, may have obscured what he really was thinking. Strong candidates, by that he probably means not favorable to the billionaire class, right?
Well, that's exactly what they mean. And that's, you know, they do say they're worried about, you know, there's a poll, I think Kaiser came out with a poll the other day. It was like, oh, swing voters in four battleground states are really unsure about some of this agenda. So if we're going to, you know, run our presidential campaigns based on what, you know, fewer than 5% of the voters think, you know, that's, I guess that may support Bloomberg's point of view from a polling perspective. But I think what they're really worried about is they just do not like the politics. And they do not like the general drift or the tone of political discourse. Billionaires, you know, here we are, what, 10 years, more than 10 years after the end of the Great Recession, and 11 years after the financial crisis. And we've had, by what looks, by standard measures, a recovery, expansion. The economy looks good by most measures. You know, the unemployment rate is low, and still still, people feel like it's crap. So they're really concerned about this, and there's a real a lot of discontent across the political spectrum, not just, you know, on the left side of the Democratic Party. And the billionaires understand that they are the target of it. Ray Dalio, who runs a hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates, one of the biggest hedge fund managers, you know, got a guy who clears $1 billion in a good year, or $2 billion in a good year, $1 billion in a mediocre year, was saying the other day that they've got to do something or the billionaire class is in jeopardy. I mean, there are people, Dalio, I used to talk to Dalio long before he became so rich and so famous. And he's quite a smart fellow with a pretty broad perspective. And some of these billionaires are really kind of, you know, live in their own bubble, but Dalio watches what's going on, and he can think, and he can see that that kind of politics, that kind of coddling of the plutocracy that has characterized economic policies since the early 1980s, it just has ceased to work, even by their own standards. Mm-hmm. But it has just provoked all kinds of bitterness and resentment, and they understand that they're the targets of it.
Let's look at Elizabeth Warren's response to Bloomberg's announcement. She said, "Welcome to the race, Mike Bloomberg. If you're looking for policy plans that will make a huge difference for working people and which are very popular, start here." And she linked to her calculator for the billionaires. So both Warren and Sanders have a pretty far-reaching, by today's standards, tax plans for billionaires. Sanders' plan, I believe, goes even further. And these are two of the top three frontrunners for the Democratic nomination. I imagine this is going to be causing a lot of panic among billionaires. But of course, even if you have huge, huge tax increases for billionaires, most of them, after paying taxes, are going to remain billionaires, right?
Well, it depends. I think Sanders is more interested in taxing the billionaire class out of existence. Hmm. I think
Warren actually said that he doesn't think billionaires should exist, which is pretty amazing.
AOC has said every billionaire is a policy mistake. So I think that wing of the party, which, you know, the people who are openly embrace the word socialist, are not looking to just raise revenue from the billionaires. I think they really just want to put a cap on incomes and put an end to them, the super rich, as a class. I think Warren is much more modest. She wants to take some of their money, leave them much of it to most of it. Obviously, her own calculations, Bill Gates would still be a billionaire, just not quite as much of a billionaire as he is. But I think, you know, Sanders, they would like to expropriate all their cash. It's pretty basic. If you look back, both of them gotten advice from Emmanuel Saez and Gabriel Zucman, a couple of economists at Berkeley who've done an awful lot of work on, along with Thomas Piketty, on income distribution over the really long term, and the incidence of taxation over the really long term. And I just myself interviewed Saez, my radio show, and was talking to him about this, and he kind of agreed that my distinction was more or less correct. But in the book that Saez and Zucman just came out with, they look back at tax policy from the 1930s into the early 1980s when things really started changing. And the top tax rates that existed in those days, the average in that period was over 80%. For the very top. But there's a period in the 30s and 40s was close to 100% at the very top. And Roosevelt was very clear that it was meant as an act of expropriation, that you just shouldn't have that much money. And this was the United States. This was not, you know, a Bolshevik revolution. This was the United States, where it was consensus policy for four decades that there really should be a cap on incomes and a cap on wealth, for reasons of equity, but also for reasons of political power. You know, there's just like, you get people that much money and they're going to have a really outsized influence on policy and politics. And we had 40 years where those sorts of fortunes didn't exist. If you go back and look at the Forbes 400 when it debuted in 1982, these were people with a few hundred million dollars, you know, even adjusting for inflation. They had nothing like the money they do now. It's just increased, I did the math a while back, I think it's like 16-fold, even after adjusting for inflation. There's just so much money at the top now in ways that we never saw during that period. And I think Sanders, more strenuously, and Warren more gently, wants to get to back to something like this. And these guys understand that. Now, I would say about Bloomberg, he's not the candidate for this agenda. You know, if you want to defend the billionaire's interests, you have to find somebody who's a good performer, who will appeal to the masses and convince them that somehow it's in their interest to protect the fortunes of billionaires.
And is that why is that why people are pouring money into Pete Buttigieg?
Yeah, I mean, he comes off as, you know, he's this guy from Fort Wayne. You know, nobody knows his father is a Gramsci scholar, They're hoping he would be their savior. You know, the modest guy from the heartland, who also carries automatic weapons in some of his campaign photos. But you know, they're really strenuously trying to promote him. There was a CNN headline a week or two ago. He's coming in a strong fourth now. You know, so they're really excited about that. But he doesn't. I really doubt he has what it takes for the long term. But I even more so doubt that Bloomberg has it. You know, it's embarrassing now to be from New York and have our mayors launching these vanity campaigns. First, de Blasio, who got zero in some polls, literally not a single respondent cast a vote for de Blasio.
That's the current mayor of New York, yes.
Yeah, he's really kind of a doofus. I'm not a big fan of Bill de Blasio, but I can't imagine that Bloomberg would do much better despite his $53 billion.
Doug, let's talk about Bernie Sanders and Bill Gates. In a recent news story, Bill Gates said, he was commenting on this idea of a wealth tax. He said, I've paid over $10 billion in taxes. I've paid more than anyone in taxes. If I had to pay $20 billion, that's fine. But when you say I should pay $100 billion, then I'm starting to do a little math over what I have left over. So Bill Gates wants to pay more in taxes, but not too much more. And then Bernie Sanders countered saying, say Bill Gates was actually taxed $100 billion. We could end homelessness and provide safe drinking water to everyone in this country. Bill would still be a multi-billionaire. Our message, the billionaire class cannot have it all when so many have so little. That was, I thought, pretty powerful. And isn't that the kind of messaging that Americans who are struggling every single day are naturally responding to positively?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, there's this thread of thought that holds that the masses actually prefer billionaires to like rich managerial class types. So there's one analysis I've read, I recall, of the 2016 election, in which a lot of, the classic white working class Trump voter type preferred Trump to Hillary because Hillary was like this managerial character who was their social worker or their boss who told them what to do. Whereas someone like Trump made all this money and he's independent. He's got kind of this, you know, flipping the bird spirit, and they kind of admire that. I don't know if that's true. I would hope that the American masses have their heads screwed on straight enough to understand that the billionaires' interests are not their own, and that a message like Sanders would win them over. Who knows? We'll see. I just kind of wanted to make the point that we have to make clear whether we want to use the tax on billionaires to raise money or to put an end to them as a class. Because if we put an end to them as a class, we won't be able to use them as an ongoing ATM for social programs. But if, you know, we just want to have lighter taxes of the sort that Warren does, maybe we could to some degree. But if you raise taxes on that class, a lot of that money is just going to disappear. I mean, it's going to be like going back to the days of, you know, before 1981, when those sorts of fortunes just didn't exist.
When you say that the money would disappear, it's just that essentially, are you saying that they would make it disappear because they'd be offshoring it, or that once you stop making them billionaires, then you can't keep taxing them?
I think they do their best to shelter it, you know, offshore and such, or through legal maneuvers or whatever. But I think if you're really serious about taxing them, you get around that. States are very resourceful, very powerful, have enormous amounts of resources. So if the state wanted to tax them, it could. There's just this idea that they could just get away with it is, I think, preposterous. But what I mean is that corporations didn't pay people the way they do now if they knew that was going to get taxed at 90%. The same thing with, you know, superstars in showbiz or whatever. Many of our new fortunes come from owners of private companies who are they just wouldn't be paying themselves that much money if they knew it's going to get taxed at 90%. So, you know, if we do enter that realm, where which it's kind of hard to imagine now, it seems almost revolutionary to think about getting back to those tax rates, but it's something entertaining to think about. But I think that those kinds of paychecks would they'd be lopping off a few zeros in those paychecks. They'd be well off. But you know, in that Saya Zuckman book, they quote a piece from Fortune from the 1950s that described the life of a CEO at the time, and they really basically lived a pretty high-end, but kind of not unlike a suburban middle-class American life. They had a nicer car, bigger house, but it was nothing like the extravagance that the CEO class is familiar with now. And it was, a lot of it has to do with those tax rates. Just when you're taxed, the top tax rate is 80 or 90%, they're not going to be paying people those big fortunes. But I think there's a great social good in ending those sorts of fortunes. So, you know, I'm not looking to them just to raise revenue. But, you know, if you go after them once and take their $100 billion, you could do a lot with that. You could rebuild, you know, our infrastructure. You could end homelessness. You know, you could do a lot of things with that kind of money.
The other subclass of billionaires that's terrified of a Warren Sanders president's Warren or Sanders presidency are tech giants and tech CEOs, in particular, folks like Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, who are terrified of not only high corporate tax rates, but also, in the case of Zuckerberg, for example, regulations that would deeply potentially dig into Facebook's profit margins. And so they, I feel like, you know, and it's interesting because these are men who, and they're mostly men, who like to showcase themselves, showcase their socially liberal politics. So they are, you know, fairly clearly anti-Trump, although Zuckerberg seems to be trying to cross both lines. And yet they are terrified of coming down on the side of Warren and Sanders, who represented an existential threat to them. And so a centrist like Joe Biden or Michael Bloomberg or Pete Buttigieg, I imagine, is who they're going to champion as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, you know, Zuckerberg somewhat brought his socially progressive credentials into question when he hugged Narendra Modi, but you know, most people don't appreciate that.
And he's meeting with a lot of right-wing news website, you know, people who own and run right-wing media outlets. And of course, his algorithms tend to favor their outlets too.
I guess. I don't really see them. That's not my Facebook experience, but I guess all the algorithm treats us all differently. But yeah, they're absolutely terrified of that stuff. They've just had the easiest way of it with no supervision, no regulation, nothing. Facebook is also a company, unlike a lot of these tech companies that aren't making any money. You know, it's not like WeWork. It's Facebook makes a lot of money. And they've been sheltering it all offshore through all these crazy, crazy schemes, like, you know, what is it, the Irish sandwich and all these sorts of things. I can't remember all the cute names they have for these tax avoidance techniques. But Facebook is a master of that sort of thing, and they apparently hardly pay any taxes at all. And they'd be scared of paying taxes, but they're also scared of the scrutiny and the regulation. And it's not just the tech guys, you know, like the energy sector has been basically deregulated under Trump, and finance got slightly re-regulated after the 2009 crash, they've had it pretty easy too. Warren or Sanders presidency would mean a complete shift in the nature of regulation of these important sectors: tech, finance, energy, environmental regulations. I think a lot of these folks must be quivering in their boots because I can't imagine that Biden or any of these centrist Democrats would come in with a very heavy regulatory hand. It would take someone of more radical instincts like Sanders or even Warren.
Right. I mean, essentially, they want the financial policies of Trump with the presidential quality of an Obama, right?
Both under Clinton. You know, Clinton deregulated finance, let them do whatever they wanted to. That was part of the whole third wave philosophy, the Clinton-Blair philosophy. You let finance bloom and you maybe get a little bit in taxes out of them to spread around with really modest social programs, but nothing big, and let finance pretty much do what it wants. That was the Clinton approach. And I think a lot of those people would be nostalgic for a Bill Clinton-style presidency.
So let's also talk about Republicans. There's such a interesting political battle happening right now because Republicans are, for the most part, defending their president in spite of how embarrassing it's turning out to be to defend him. And, you know, at the same time, they are definitely in favor of his policies towards the wealthy. There is now talk of a new tax reform bill that they want to try to introduce next year, as if last year's tax reform bill didn't benefit the wealthiest Americans enough. And I guess they are imagining that Trump's base and their base is going to turn a blind eye to how they've been fleeced by this tax reform bill. I mean, is it just audacious to, from their part that they're going to be coming up with, you know, even more tax reform to benefit the wealthy?
Well, God, you know, they've never been shy. And one of the ways that the right has been so successful for the last several decades is that they're not inhibited at all. They don't care. They're as outrageous as they can possibly be, and they just get away with it time after time. And that's also Trump's personality.
Right.
You know, I've been in New York. I moved to New York in 1979, which is pretty much when Trump burst on the scene here. And that's where he's been for the
last
4 years.
And he's now leaving your state. He's going to Florida because apparently there's better tax rates there.
Well, also, my friend Margaret Kimberly won. Wonders if he's afraid of judgments being legal judgments against him, and Florida, I think, offers better shields for those than New York would. Like, what's her name, E. Jean Carroll, the woman who's suing him for defamation. If she wins her suit, then Trump might find it easier to evade any kind of judgment if he's living in Florida. But yeah, this guy has just one time after another. Broken promises, violated laws, done whatever he wants to.
And his foundation was just fined and closed down for illegal dealings, Trump Foundation in New York.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just been one after another. He is a personal serial crime wave. And but he constantly gets away with it. You know, it takes the breath away how this guy gets away with it. And all these Democrats and liberals are always so inhibited. And, oh, is this proper? As much as I find the right politically repulsive, I do have to admire their tenacity and boldness. They don't give in. They have a demented set of political principles, but they're very devoted to them and pursue them with great fervor. I wish we could see more of that on the other side of the aisle.
Well, Doug, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Anytime. Always good to be with you.
My guest has been Doug Henwood. He's a political economist, editor of Left Business Observer, and contributing editor at The Nation. He also hosts a Pacifica radio show called Behind the News. And he's written some books called, one of them being After the New Economy, as well as My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. We've been discussing panic among America's billionaires at the current political landscape. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.